Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. Welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. This is lesson number 24 in our series on the book of Acts. And we will be in Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 22. Not a whole lot of ground to cover today. And the title of our lesson is The Second Missionary Journey, Part 4. And this is the fourth and final lesson that we will have on the second missionary journey. So, where we last left Paul, was in Athens. He had just finished wrapping up his sermon on Mars Hill to the philosophers there. And we looked at the amazing sermon that he had there. We dealt with the events that got him to Athens at Thessalonica and Berea. Well, this is going to be one of those rare cases where Paul gets to leave basically when he chooses. And so in this case, Paul is actually just going to be able to walk away from Athens and move on down the road. And what we're going to have here is in wrapping up the last leg of his missionary journey, Paul's going to travel to Corinth. And yes, that is the place he wrote two books of the Bible to, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. And then eventually he will head back to Antioch and wrap up, finish up his circuit on the second missionary journey. Like I said before, his first missionary journey, he stayed, in Asia Minor, really didn't stray too far from Antioch. But this second missionary journey didn't set out to be quite as bold as it turned out, but really has covered a lot of ground, has been able to take the gospel into the heart of the Greek world, which was the leading culture at the time. So, I mean, really has been able to do a tremendous work on this journey. We've seen a lot of souls saved. We've seen churches started from places, Philippi, to Berea, to Thessalonica, and, all these names all sound familiar because a lot of these places, Paul wrote books of the Bible back to. So, like I said, today we will begin in Corinth, and we'll wrap up and get him back to Antioch and wrap up this last leg of the journey. So, I look forward to being done with the second missionary journey, feel like I'm making progress in these lessons, but at the same time, kind of wish it wouldn't end. I'd really love to keep going. But anyway, let's deal with our setting. We're going to begin in Athens. And I say we're going to travel to Corinth all the way back to Antioch. Just some stats on the second missionary journey. It took somewhere around 3 years to complete the journey. And traveled somewhere around 2,800 miles. So a lot of miles, especially for the ancient world where there was a lot of travel take place in the Roman world, but the average Roman citizen did not travel very much. And in fact, probably there were millions of people in the Roman Empire that did not travel as far as Paul did just in this single journey. And once again, the time frame of this is 49 to 52 AD, somewhere in that time frame. So, we're at the later end of that, 51, 52 AD at this point. So, here we go. Let's go ahead and we'll jump right on in. No sense of me rambling very far. We'll jump right on in and we will wrap up the second missionary journey. So, in chapter 18, book of Acts, verse number 1. After these things, Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth. Now, Corinth is a very important town. It's a very interesting town. It's located on a very narrow isthmus. Once again, let me tell you, look at a map. It'll probably help explain this, but Greece kind of comes down, kind of this little peninsula comes down. Athens is kind of, on the western end of it. Well, or the eastern end, as you're traveling due west from Athens, there's a little narrow, there's a little narrow isthmus that connects that part of Greece from this other part, which is, boy, what was it called? Achaia? I've gone blank on the name. Greek regions and towns get a little confusing after a while. But anyway, this region over there. And Corinth was located on that very strategic location. It was heavily fortified. They had a large Acropolis. Basically, they could control flow across land, but from east to west. And they also could control trade trying to sail through there. Because what this was Corinth was a major port. And you'd think, well, why in the world is a port? It's kind of right in the middle of Greece. Well, in those days, if you could save any time sailing and go across land, it was much, much safer. And so they could actually cut many miles, a couple hundred miles sailing, if they would sail in to Corinth or Centria, which was its kind of sister city on the other end of the isthmus. And they would unload their goods, and it's actually very amazing. They actually had a road built, and there's different legends and stuff about it. But they had rollers, and they actually could bring ships across the land. They would load them up and pull them across the land on this system of rollers, and unload all the goods and carry them. And it was a system. Must have been something amazing in those times. I mean, even nowadays, that's something that would seem unheard of. This is a place, actually, they wanted to build a canal there. In fact, Nero started to build it, and slaves, a little bit further on history, about 20 years further on history, but slaves from the Judean Revolt actually were used to help do it, and never did get it finished in time, but in fact, they didn't get very far, but there's actually a great carving of like Nero and stuff in there. And actually, I think it was the French or something. After they invented dynamite, they actually able to go in and finish it. But it really is an amazing deal there. Anyway, but this time, that wasn't there. So they would travel and carry this stuff across land. So an amazing deal. So it was a port town, a sailing town, very, very rough town, a very wicked town. A lot of people say because of the sailors and stuff, but nonetheless, it was a very wicked town. It's also the seat of Roman government in southern Greece. So not only is it an important port city, it's also important as far as, Roman government goes. So that's Corinth. This is a major, this is a very large town. It's very important. A lot of trade goes through there. There's quite a bit of wealth. So very important town. You can do a lot of study. There's a lot of really neat stuff about Corinth. A lot of neat ruins also. So, if you want to look up pictures of that. So Paul arrives, verse 2, and found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy, with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome and came unto them. We'll go ahead and read verse 3, then we'll break this down. And because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers. Okay, so let's break all this down. So he arrives in Corinth. There is somewhat of a Jewish population there, and he meets a guy named Aquila, who's married to Priscilla. Now, I love the rhyming there. Very poetic. And by the way, Aquila means eagle, by the way, if you just want to know that, that's for free. So he's not even from there. He's born in Pontus, which is actually Asia Minor. If you go draw a line kind of from Jerusalem to Antioch and keep going straight north, that's where Pontus is. It's up on the northern coast of Asia Minor. And they've arrived in Corinth. They're merchants. They're tent makers, and they actually had been in Italy. In fact, in Rome, and the Emperor Claudius, who's emperor at the time, had actually commanded, kicked all the Jews out of Rome. So, the Jews were never very popular, and something happened. Usually it's a fire or something like that. And they kind of like Nero did with the great fire at Rome, and how they blamed it on the Christians. you know, kind of a similar type thing probably happened there. I don't remember if there's a historical record of that or not. I didn't make a note of it in my notes. Well, I mean, this is a historical record. It's good enough, but I don't know of any corroborating, you know, historical references. So anyway, so here they are, Aquila and Priscilla. They're tent makers. That's their trade, and they're in Corinth, which, yeah, it's good. If you're a merchant, probably a good place to go. A lot of trade going through there, and just so happens that's Paul's trade too. Which is, this is a little detail that's kind of been left out to now that. You know, that Paul actually had a trade. And most people at the time, and even Jews, had a trade. It's what their family did. It was something that they knew how to do. They grew up, they were trained to do. And basically, in that way, they could always make a living. And that's something there's kind of been a return to, even in America lately, where you see people really wanting to learn a trade and pass it down in the family. And let's say if you are a skilled tradesman, you know, you can always or usually find a job or work for yourself or something. There's a lot of benefit to it. So just so happens that was Paul's trade, because let's say practically every Jew had some type of trade that they were in, whether fishermen or, you know, tanning or something along those lines. Well, his was making tents. Well, wow, here's two more Jews, and they're nice, and they're also strangers in this big city, and they make tents. So, wow, match made in heaven. And of course, Quill and Priscilla get saved. So they're Christians. So great fellowship that's able to go on there. So Paul goes in with them, kind of goes in business with them, which is something else very interesting about Paul. Paul never depended on, you know, outside support all the time. He was willing to work with his own hands to meet his needs. You know, he wasn't always sitting back saying, oh man, if Philippi or Laodicea or Colossae would just send me some money so I could, I can't go on any further. You know, Antioch, please, I need support. Now, he was willing to, you know, work with his own hands. He didn't, you know, depend on support to get stuff done. Sometimes I think today's Christians ought to be a little bit more like that and think, well, you know, if God really called you to do something, maybe you just need to get started and do it yourself and see how far you can get. Now, I understand if you're going to foreign mission field, you can't do that. But, you know, God's called you to, you know, start a camp. You know, maybe you need to get you a good job, make a lot of money, and, you know, finance and build that camp with your own hands instead of going around trying to drum up support to do it. You know, just saying. I know no specific example in mind when I said that. That's just off the top of my head as an example. Anyway, verse 4, and he, Paul, reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks. So, boy, you know, people are getting saved. Verse 5, this is funny. Silas and Timothy finally catch up with them. Verse 5, and when Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. So he's been leading up to this point. Now, once he's got some backup, Silas and Timothy are there. Boy, he lets loose. Boy, he's burdened, and he really lets loose and goes to town, doubles down his effort to preach Christ. Verse 6, and when they oppose themselves and blaspheme, so basically in his preaching and in his the arguments he's laying out in this debate, he trips them up to the point that they have to deny truth and blaspheme. It says, he shook his raiment, and we don't know exactly what they said, but anyway, he crossed them up to the point that to reject what he was saying, they had to accept a lie. It says, he shook his raiment and said unto them, your blood be upon your own heads, I am clean, from henceforth I will go unto the Gentiles. Now, this is a pretty big turning point. I mean, it's still the second missionary journey. A lot of people look at this and say, wow, well, here's Paul. He's now going to forget those Jews and just preach to the Gentiles. No, he didn't do that. He still went to the Jews. At least for the time being locally, he's going to say, look, forget you guys. You guys ain't going to listen. I'll go to the Gentiles. But really, from this point on, his ministry does take on a more Gentile character and flavor. He is preaching more to the Gentiles. And he's going to do things more Gentile-like in some cases, like using his Roman citizenship that he may not have done before. Verse 7, and he departed thence and entered into a certain man's house named Justus, one that worshipped God, whose house joined hard to the synagogue. So you got to imagine, basically he's next door. The buildings, if you see, you don't see this a lot necessarily nowadays. You know, there's lots, at least in America, there's space in between houses. Unless you go like downtown or places, I know Chicago and San Francisco, a place like this where the houses literally are attached to each other. You know, it's just a row of houses. You know, I know Britain has a lot of places like that. Well, that's the way this was. And the synagogue is there. Well, right next door, this guy, Justus, his house touches. They're connected. And Paul goes there right next door. He's almost asking for a fight. And this guy's some type of a proselyte. He worships God. Evidently not a Jew, but anyway, he's right next door. And so there he is. He's preaching and teaching right next door to the Jewish synagogue. In verse 8, and Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his house. So, wow, the leader of the Jews just got saved. And everybody in his house, all his servants and everybody. And many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized. So boy, that makes a big impact. Everybody says, well, if he can believe, wow, must be really be something to it. So boy, revival is coming down. And I think this is very interesting. What happens? Revival comes, people get saved. What follows? Trouble. Well, right now, I imagine right now, Paul's getting nervous thinking, boy, what's coming now? Who's going to try to kill me? You know, maybe I need to go ahead and go make arrangements in the local prison. Well, verse 9, the Lord's got a message for him. Then spake the Lord to Paul in night by vision. Be not afraid, but speak, and hold not thy peace. Verse 10, for I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee, for I have much people in this city. So Lord sends him some comfort and says, look, don't worry. You keep going. You keep doing what you're doing. You know, there's a great work that needs to be done. Very interesting. He says, I have much people in the city. Who's he talking about? Is there a bunch of Christians? No, but I think there's a bunch of people who are going to be saved, who are ready, that God has prepared, and they're ready to hear the gospel. And he doesn't want Paul to be discouraged, because there is a great harvest out there if Paul will remain strong and be faithful. So, boy, I took my eyes off and lost my place. So verse 11, he continued there a year and 6 months. This is very strange. He's there for, you know, 18 months, quite a long time, teaching the word of God among them. So this stays a very long time. He doesn't just get run out of town after a couple of weeks. He's there for, you know, a year and a half, preaching and teaching and training. So here we go. After a year and a half, finally, we have trouble. Verse 12. And when Gallio, which was the deputy of Achaia, hey, I got that right earlier, it is Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat. So here we go. Gallio. We actually know something about this guy. He was Roman proconsul. So he's an appointed ruler of this region of Achaia. And his brother was rather famous too. His name was Seneca. Very famous Roman there, if you do study on him. Verse 13, so the Jews have made insurrection, that they're going to bring charges to this guy, and they're going to, you know, boy, they're going to get rid of Paul. Verse 13, saying, this is the Jews, this fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. And I love this. It's the same charge. It's, look, he's trying to tell us to do things that Caesar wouldn't let us to do. You know, it's the exact same charge. Was this the third or fourth time that we've had that in the last few chapters? In verse 14, Paul's actually there. And when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Gallio said unto the Jews, so he doesn't even get a chance to give the response. Gallio just says, takes charge. And if it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would that I should bear with you. Verse 15, but if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look ye to it, for I will be no judge of such matters. I like this. Like, look, if this guy was a criminal, you know, I deal with it. But look, I'm not going to get involved in your religious disputes. Verse 16, he drave them from the judgment seat. So he runs them out of town. I love this. He runs them out. It's like, look, guys, don't waste my time. I'm so sick of this. And I'm not going to get caught in your trap, and runs them out. Verse 17, unfortunately, this is kind of, unfortunately, his actions go a little bit further and gets a crowd incited, and kind of a little bit of a riot breaks loose. Verse 17, then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, evidently Crispus's replacement, and beat him before the judgment seat. So they're like, yeah, everybody, yeah, boy, those Jews, run them out of town. In fact, boy, let's really teach them a lesson. So they grab Sosthenes and they beat him up right in front of the judgment seat, right in front of Gallio. And what did Gallio do? The last part of verse 17, and Gallio cared for none of those things. So he just let it go. Like, okay, well, I'm not going to deal with that. And basically let it happen without any repercussion. Perhaps this shows maybe his hatred towards the Jews. Perhaps this shows how far he wanted to stay out of that mess. But that's what happens. That's what happens there. That's what a little bit of a riot ensues. So basically, you know, what looks like Paul's about to be run out of town, thrown in jail, beaten, turns right around on the Jews, and none of that happens. So that's going to wrap up Paul's stay in Corinth, which is also amazing. This is going to be the second straight place he's been. He's going to leave of his own accord. So, verse 18. And Paul, after this, tarried there yet a good while. So he's already been there 18 months. Now he's a good while. So he's been there for a while. And then took his leave of the brethren and sailed thence into Syria. And with him, Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Cenchrea, for he had a vow. So, this is, there's a little bit of confusing stuff here, and we kind of have to read between some lines and assume some things here. Paul's ready to leave, and he's headed to Syria, that back to Antioch. He's taking Priscilla and Aquila with him. And kind of gets out of head. It's like, it sounds like, oh, he went to Syria, and then he ends up Cenchrea. No. Cenchrea or Cantria, however you say that. That, like I said, that's the sister city to Corinth. So he's headed towards Syria, but he's in Cenchrea setting sail. And it talks about him taking a Jewish vow. What that is, why that is, we do not know. Paul does this a couple of times. And even the whole idea of the Jewish vows, it's kind of a little sketchy thing. It's kind of hard to understand. I've done a little reading on it, trying to understand it, and I don't understand it. But basically this vow is you shave your head and you are supposed to go to Jerusalem and offer sacrifices. So it does not in this next couple verses say he went to Jerusalem, but a lot of people assume that he did. And so we'll just go and throw that in there for free. Verse 19, and he came to Ephesus. So they sailed for Cenchrea, they sailed basically due east to Ephesus, which is back in Asia Minor, which, remember, Ephesians, you know, another place, which, boy, we dealt with that, with the history there. So he's actually a return visit there to Ephesus. Verse 19, he came to Ephesus and left them there, that's Priscilla and Aquila, but he himself entered into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. So right back to, you know, his modus operandi. He shows up, goes to the Jews. Verse 20, when they desired him to tarry longer time with them, he consented not. So, boy, the church is excited. Perhaps the Jews wanted, hear more about it, wanted to stay longer. And he's like, look, nope, I got to go. Probably because of this Jewish vow that he is supposed to go back to Jerusalem for. Verse 21, but bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem. That probably also has to do with the vow. But I will return again unto you, if God will. And he sailed from Ephesus. So he takes off from there after saying goodbye, verse 22. And when he had landed at Caesarea, that's in Israel, that's the major port for Israel. It's up further north from Jerusalem. So evidently right there he went down to Jerusalem and to this feast. We don't know what. wherever this vow and the sacrifices, the ceremony to do there, but whatever that was taken care of right there. And it says, and gone up and saluted the church, he went down the act. That's probably what's talking about, gone up and saluted the church, was going to Jerusalem. That's probably what that's talking about there. It says, then he went down to Antioch. So he returns, goes back north, travels back up, you know, through Samaria, Phoenicia, back up in Syria, back to Antioch, completing his circuit and completing his journey. And right there, we're going to go ahead and call it quits. It's kind of, there's still another verse left in the paragraph there, if you've got paragraph marks in your Bible, but kind of a good stopping spot, because verse 23, he's going to stay there a little while, and then he's going to take right back off on missionary journey number 3. So kind of blends them together. It's almost like he doesn't even stop. He just, you know, stays long enough, catches breath, get a change of clothes, and takes right back off. Kind of the ancient road warrior, you know. So there we go. We have wrapped up the second missionary journey of Paul. And what a journey it's been. You know, started off to just revisit where he'd been. The Lord leads him over into Macedon, into Greece. A lot of places he visits here that are so familiar because of books of the Bible and what happened. Philippi and Corinth and Ephesus. Visits Thessalonica. So many places like that. They're so familiar to us nowadays. And a lot of amazing things happen. That, you know, Philippi, what happened in Philippi probably is the most famous, being with the miraculous deliverance from prison. The sermon at Mars Hill, though. And I say Corinth, writing, he writes two letters to Corinth, two letters to Thessalonica, a letter to Philippi. I mean, there's a lot of letters, a lot of the rest of the New Testament is written to places he visited right now in this journey. So, like I said, this journey took somewhere around 3 years. He's traveled about 2,800 miles. He has done quite a bit of work, but we can tell everywhere he's been, there's souls been saved. There's been churches started. The brethren have been strengthened. And he has done a lot of work to help spread the gospel. Like I said, if you really, like I said this early on, but if you kind of imagine Jerusalem being the epicenter, you can almost draw concentric circles going out as like a ripple effect as the gospel just keeps spreading out further and further. And it's like Paul just took it out another circle, just a little bit further. And next time, the third missionary journey, you know, it's going to be the similar, just keep spreading out further, reaching new people, seeing more souls saved. Well, there we go. Boy, I appreciate you listening. Wrapping up that, boy, I really feel like we're finally getting somewhere in the book of Acts. There for a while, it's like, boy, are we ever going to really, you know, get some ground covered? But boy, wrapping up second missionary journey, boy, really feel like we're really into the book. And I mean, we still have, about 10 chapters to go. So still quite a bit to cover. I mean, I guess we're only about 2/3 of the way done. But anyway, really feel like we're really, really doing very good and getting along in this. So anyway, I appreciate you listening today. Hope to have you in next time as we begin to look at the third missionary journey of Paul and continue on with our study. Well, I appreciate you listening today. I'm Matthew Gage. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you, and I will see you next time in our next lesson from Baptist Basics University.